Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of Leaders in Supply Chain podcast. I'm your host, Rado Palamario. Delighted to have with us today Dr. Thomas Schomburg, who is the SVP Supply Chain Excellence at Evonik. You may know Evonik is one of the largest specialty chemicals groups in the world, and Thomas is here to share some interesting case studies and facts about their supply chain. Thomas, thanks for joining us and welcome.
Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
So first, maybe let me start with yourself. You have quite a fascinating background. By education, you were a mathematician. Then you actually worked as a research assistant. Then you did a couple of roles around corporate development. And then the last, you know, 5-10 years around supply chain. So tell us a little bit the story of your career. How did you switch? How did you end up doing supply chain?
Do you want to hear the truth, or do you want to have the more educated story that I would tell in the job?
The truth always works best. And, you know, just to preframe it, I've not yet come across, I mean, we've interviewed 150 in supply chain. None of them wanted to be or dreamt or planned to be in supply chain. So the wilder, the better.
Then the very truth is I planned for quite a lot of things in my career, starting with which I wanted to study. It was not mathematics. I wanted to study different things. But I failed, and so in order to do something, I turned up and tried mathematics, which was actually great, but I would never dare of becoming a mathematician. And then that story goes on. I did great things, but I always planned for other things. And then out of a sudden, opportunities came up. So, okay, why not? Yeah. And so once I'm coming from a big family of construction workers, so I'm the first one going to academia. Yeah. And so everything. Okay, what are you doing with math? So no, you will be kind of unemployed, a taxi driver. So come on, boy, come on, we teach you something which is more handy and more better paid than what you most likely will do. And so I'm combining some extract skills, and I know how to drive on a construction ground. Also, I have a PhD, and someone, former company, they searched someone to build up one of the most modern data center at that time in Europe, which was something we had to report to the supervisory board. You needed someone able to speak to supervisory board, as well as on the same time be able to survive on a construction site and close like 16 data center locations all around Europe. And that kind of skills in one person is very rare. Yeah, and that is basically the story of my life. I never worked in my core competency, so mathematics, streamline mechanics, and all the kinds of things. So nowadays I can plus and minus most of the time, but I always found jobs where I could combine a series of my strengths to, yeah, more often than not to an inspiring and satisfying outcome. So I did roughly 10 years in the energy and utility industry, as just described, very, very different positions, and none of them was planned. And then I was asked, okay, whether I would join Evonik. And that days I started within corporate IT, which everyone in Evonik makes me believe I could fix their computer, which we already talked about. I can't, because I'm not from IT. Also, I'm fiend to computers, and I can do some programming things as a mathematician, but that, as I said, I can't fix it. But I did 3 years in corporate IT. Very interesting, really surprising, completely different world than I experienced before. 2 years of strategy, and then I was asked, and that's my entry into a supply chain, to build up an in-house consultancy group for supply chain management, because at that days they had the feeling, okay, we are not good enough in supply chain management as we should be, and do you want to build an in-house group? I said, okay, why not? I never did this before, but that's the common denominator of all the things. I never did things I was properly trained for. So why not? It sounds like fun. And what I need then, I need the permission to hire people from the external market who have a clue about supply chain management, because I in that day did not. Yeah, of course, a little bit, but not enough to really run a group of consultancies. And then we started with like 25 to 30 people, although only from the external market, either from industries which are fairly more advanced in supply chain management than the chemical one is, or even more from people with consultancy background in supply chain management. That ended up in being me, head of a group with excellent teachers. And so after 7 years now in this group, I can say I learned a bit. So nowadays I have a slightly understanding what supply chain management is all about. And even more important, how can we apply this knowledge into a chemical company like Evonik is.
Love it. So I'll stay a little bit on this topic, and I have a further question, but let me give some context. So we about 6 months ago, we put out a book with Knut, he's a partner at McKinsey. We interviewed a lot of different chief operations officers, chief supply chain officers, CEOs from supply chain. And one in particular, this was a recurring theme, not too far from what you said, in a sense of go where the most value and impact is. That was a principle that some of them said. And one in particular, Lynn Torrell, so she's the chief supply chain officer of Flextronics. So she even gave the example how she moved from managing 3,000 people at some point of her career to an individual contributor role. Because the individual contributor role was supposed to align strategies at the board level. So she saw the impact that that job would make further to managing how many X people. So now you doing, having done so many different roles and none of which you've actually been trained for, my question, the question that I wanted to ask you also is, are there certain patterns or certain, because you've obviously been successful, certain principles that when you go into these new roles that you've never dealt with before, that you always try to apply, that the audience can learn from?
First off, you have to be absolutely honest with yourself that you are new in a role and that you need to learn. And you need to learn in the fastest possible way that you can. Yeah. So that means you can ask questions. There are at the very beginning, there are no such stupid question, but the one question you have in mind and don't ask. And you need some, let's say, some ideas, some paths, how you can bring yourself into a meaningful impact positions in the fastest amount of time. In my case, I always have been in a, let's say, lucky position that I had people around me who were more knowledgeable in the details of what needs to be done. And I could focus on creating the structures and working on connecting the dots. That is something a mathematician usually can do quite well, is sorting complexity into digestible pieces. Yeah, so I don't know if you have the saying in English, in Germany, we say how to eat an elephant. And the answer is
exactly
piece by piece. Yeah. And the question is, okay, how to make the pieces, how to define a structure that is then eatable in a meaningful way. And that is something that you have to make yourself very, very clear about. You yourself won't do the trick, which is good if you are a leader, because then you are not in danger of doing the stuff yourself because you simply can't. Yeah. So you have to rely on other skills, which you hopefully bring with you along. Yeah. Is inspiring people, making them able to align to a common idea, and then let's work together on a plan how to realize these kind of idea. And that is usually the concept that worked out more often than not. Of course, there are failures on the way, and then you have to learn.
Yes, love it. Now going to Evonik specifically and to the journey that you've been through, and you were sharing, you set up a unit in supply chain consulting from scratch. Now you're kind of the de facto chief supply chain officer running the different elements, 17 different supply chains within the same company. Yeah. So your specialty chemicals, as some of us would know, some of us may not know, is quite complex in terms of the different products that you have for the different verticals. Tell us a little bit about that journey of the last 7, 8 years to from start to finish with a key question first. Why and how did you even start and convince the board that time and your colleagues to start? And then we move through the steps.
As always, you need a combination of a clear strategy and luck. The strategy that we need to change the supply chain on a bigger scale than we could as an in-house consultants group was done in the first weeks as we started. So, okay, if we really want to have an impact like a big one in the company, then it's not good enough to have the experts and ask our businesses to join them, advise something which they may use or may not use, and then just go away. And I met one of our board members, the CEO, in an elevator, and I said, okay, come on, I never tried this. My name is Thomas, nice to meet you, by the way. We never met before. And I asked him if I can test an elevator pitch. He said, oh, come on, guys, we are now in the 19th floor and I'm leaving at -2, go ahead. So I had like 20 seconds. And at the end, he held the door open for a moment longer, listened, okay, come on, and said, can you write me an email? And the punchline was basically, okay, in order to change our supply chain, we need different structures than we have had in the past. In the past, everyone had supply chain completely organized in an individual way, let's put it that way. Some had supply chain management in the management team of the business lines. Some had them organized in the production technology team. Yeah, which is from a historical point of view understandable how it was developed. But in order to transform it, to get away from all the individual solution that we have like all around and the complexity that what was not manageable anymore, we needed a new structure. And the new structure then, and that is what luck means. There was a reorganization, an internal one a couple of years ago. And during that, we said, okay, now we bring supply chain on the plate. We create a central supply chain function with basically my team and myself. And we will make sure that in every business line, there is a comparable structure of supply chain organized. We also have divisions where they bundle it. And in all the divisions, there's also one supply chain. And by that, we make sure that we have a mix of central and decentral supply chain, but in a more sorted way that we can start the discussion, okay, how to standardize on processes, on tools, on methods, on skills, people, mindset, and all the kind of things. And that was basically the starting point. And then the next big step is to convince your board, your supervisory board, that there is a need for action and how to start. And I remember the very first page that I showed to them was aligning you. And that was a process from an end-to-end perspective. And in the end was, okay, what is supply chain all about? Supply chain is about connecting flows, material flows, information, and financials. Yeah, to any supply chain expert, it's very boring. For that moment in time, it was an eye-opener. And we could explain on many examples that we have not synchronized these flows in the proper manner. We are not in online trading. We don't need millisecond synchronicity. But if you produce something and only book what you produced at the end of the month or at the end of a quarter, and then there's a change in planning, you know what I'm up to. Yeah, and we have multi-step production. Yeah, so a product is coming out of 7 different ones, raw materials, and we produce something and intermediates, we go on, and in the end, we sell it to a B2B customer. We only do B2B. Yeah, and managing this kind of complexity without having a proper flow of information according to the material that we transform is hard as hell. And then, COVID came. Yeah, and out of the sudden, we had to react in a quite fast way, which we were not being asked to in that intensity in the past. And then all of a sudden, okay, supply chain was all over the place and everything, okay, yeah, we have to get better. And how long do you take for that? It's okay, that's the bad part of the story. We are really deep in the not so good area, let's put it that way, and we need time. It's a step-by-step approach, but it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. It was 2019 as we started. I said, okay, the program that we will set up goes at least until the end of 2025, even beyond. And as you can remember, that silent in that room, because everyone there usually has a 3-year contract, a 4-year contract, and now you're telling them that they need to decide on something they will most likely not harvest completely on the results because it will go on longer than they are here. So a real transformation. But yeah, we got support, we convinced our stakeholders, and yeah, here we are in the middle of a transformation and we are making progress step by step and piece by piece. It's hard, but it also makes fun because we are getting better each and every day.
So let me zoom in a little bit. You're the actual definition of giving an elevator speech to a CEO. So that's really cool how it all started, and good job for putting it together in 20, 30 seconds. Now, specifically for the board, yeah, and because this is a common challenge, and you're also listed, yeah, you guys are also listed, especially for listed companies, which tend to have this quarter to quarter, unfortunate in my view, but okay, this is how we designed as humans, we designed the capital market. So to tell somebody that you're going to start seeing results in 6 years, it's borderline nuts, you know, from a pitch perspective. So how did you do it? Like what exactly did you tell them that the board then said, you know what, it's worth, you know, going through the pain of change?
Of course, you need to break down once again a 6 years journey into digestible pieces. And of course, you have to promise something that you deliver that you can feel early on. Yeah. And we said there was in the very beginning, we have to think about more from a process point of view, which we didn't in the past. That ended up that, of course, we have processes. We are audited and all the kind of things, but everyone had slightly different processes. We had not one forecast to produce process. Said, okay, now we need to start to introduce in that. And that is something that we that we bundled under the slogan, we need to fix the basics. And fixing the basics is just blood, sweat, and tears. Yeah, you need to do it, you must do it, but you will not see the benefits directly out of it. You will see it in an indirect way, because then all of a sudden you have like KPIs. You have something that you can monitor. We established on a very hand manual way, we established our order forecast pattern. And in the pandemic, that was quite important. Yeah. So how is the order going to develop? And is it going like the end of the world? Yeah. Is everyone collapsing? There were a lot of theories out there. Ask 10 consultants, you get like 20 opinions. Yeah. So we say, okay, we need to establish a forecasting system very early, very rough and ready. And we did it with Power BI. A lot of manual data was uploaded there, fine-tuned, but then we could see, okay, this is the order pattern, and this is going to develop, and we used it for steering, because obviously cash management is key also in a crisis. So we were able to succeed on small pits, yeah, easy there, like rapid prototyping. Said, okay, we have it early and ready to use with a lot of manual effort, and we will then later on transfer them into stable automated operations. Nowadays, we have them in an automated way. Yeah, we are still working on our reporting system, but that's basically the idea of the transformation. And then, of course, very easy, the holy grail of supply chain management in the chemical industry is planning. Yeah, and it was very easy to explain what are the results of bad planning, yeah, of improper communication. Yeah, procurement is not knowing what to order. There are changes in our production pattern for whatever reason. There is severe winter in the US. We have planned shutdowns. We have unplanned shutdowns. We have force majeures and all of the things. So planning is one thing. Reality is another. And then with long supply chains, you have to be able to react and adopt in a proper time frame. And so we started implementing IBP. We are in the middle of the implementation, but we finalized IBP for demand. And what we did in parallel, and that's not to be recommended if you have a choice, we also implemented one standard planning process in parallel. So we fixed the process and the tool and the mindset in one step. That means we are, although we have IBP now implemented, we are not done yet. The fun part just started. Now we have a tool, and now we need to learn as a company how to properly use it. But, and that's important, you can see it on the board level. Now you can do your planning things in one planning area, and you can pull different views out of that. Yeah, and that is quite important. You have to entertain them along the run and not say, okay, wait for 6 years and then everything will be good. You have to have milestones, touchable, feelable milestones. And last thing, not to be underestimated, talking to you, you are an expert. You understand the terminologies of supply chain. If you are an industry that starts, assume that no one understands the language of supply chain. No one is brave enough to stand up, okay, I didn't get it. Can you explain it? Everyone keeps on smiling. You have to translate it into a meaningful language that is spoken by your businesses. And that's very important, because then they have a fair chance of understanding, okay, why all the effort really is needed and what it is good for from a business perspective.
Love it. This is so common. And I would almost argue that This is, regardless of how good of an understanding the organization has or not, I mean, of course, there's some that were maybe among the first to have a chief supply chain officer in the board and so on. But I would, mm-hmm. The argument is, to your point, whether it's chemicals or other industries, do not assume that somebody else within CEO level or board level understands jargon, and because they don't, and they don't care, and it's not they important. It's like for them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's that ability to create a narrative that is easily understandable in business terms, price per earnings per share, revenue, growth, whatever it might be, but business terms, not supply chain terms, is a theme that I hope more and more supply chain professionals, and I love it that you said it, because that's where they get lost in the geekish supply chain terms, and they lose the audience.
Yeah, and very important, once you think that you succeeded, repeat, 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 and repeat. Yeah, from your professional background, you may can say it's the same. Is true, we say that we have to repeat it at least 7 times until it really gets into the brain. Yeah, so repeat your narrative, make it entertaining, but repeat it and tell a consistent story all over the place, all over again. Yeah, one lucky punch is not enough to transform the company.
I think there was a, I remember there was a, I can't remember who said it, but something to the extent that when you feel that you have repeated it so many times that you're sick of it yourself, it is only then that the message is starting to land.
Yes, absolutely. I can confirm that from my first-hand experience. That is absolutely true.
Yes. And this also kind of gets me to the point. So I also want to stress and underline what you said, because again, for the benefit of the audience, getting that balance between quick wins or staged wins where you can show, look, this is the return, this is, and long-term. It's always that balance of, you know, what are the low-hanging fruits where you can already show that you're making progress, so that feeds the oil and the fuel into the long-term vision of the journey. That is crucial, not to only look 6 years, because then nobody will sign it off. Now, I want to also ask a little bit, because you probably would have some examples of how specifically it helped you already, yeah, if you look back on the last couple of years, thinking from an end-to-end perspective. So, and I want to start by giving a context. I was talking to a CEO recently, and then he was saying that, look, anyways, different industry, but not that far off. And then he was sharing that they historically were excellent at running their factories. They were manufacturing some sort of paints or whatever, and excellent at manufacturing, process excellence, Lean, Six Sigma, all of those things. However, the crux of it was that they were not an end-to-end organization historically. Hence, yes, you have the best produced whatever mouse in the world or paint in the world, but if you have it in the wrong place at the wrong time, you just have inventory, and so your cash is stuck. So you always need to think end-to-end. So tell us a little bit how that journey first, how did you change the mindset of the people that were not used to think end-to-end, and then some of the benefits that you got tangibly in Evonik?
Then let's stick to the inventory example, because that is actually also a very good one. In the past, as we started looking at inventory, then we basically looked at it from a financial perspective. Yeah, and all of a sudden the narrative was out there, okay, we have a really serious trouble because our inventory are increasing and increasing and increasing, which is true. If you only look at value, they go up like hell. Yeah. If you look on the other side, something that we couldn't in the past, if you would look at the volume world, yeah, we are not flat. Yeah, we are a company with producing, we have seasonal patterns, we have maintenance and all the kind of things. And as you said, we are listed. So we try to manage our inventory with a year-end target. Yeah. So there is a pattern. Yeah. But it's not that it's always going up. If you look at the range of coverage, then it's, yeah, I would say more or less over the years, it's on a stable manner. It's not gone wild and crazy. Looking only at values, it is. And what we did, we were able now to combine both views, because neither of them is wrong or right. Only looking at one is simply not sufficient enough. Yeah. And with that was an eye-opener in bringing more facts on the table and a very emotional thing before. And what you can imagine what happens if you only look at the financial point of view, then out of a sudden your CFO resource is going very worried. Yes, okay, oh my goodness, my free cash flow and all the kind of thing. And now I have to put pressure on the supply chain parts. Of course, yeah, net working capital is more than just inventory, but inventory is very easy to address. Yeah. And here we were able to bring more facts and figures into the discussion by not only knowing, okay, what kind of inventories are we having? We also know, when we now combine the planning, what kind of inventory do we need? Where is our actually inventory really in all over the world? Is it in the right place or not? Yeah. Of course, we are not completely there. As I said, we have just implemented IBP for demand, yeah, not supply and optimizer. So there is still a step to go, but you now can clearly see where it will lead to, and you can really start to feel the benefit out of it, because your imagination takes you the rest of the step. And now we can ask ourselves question, okay, what is then really the right target for stock level? What is safety stock really all about? How is our SLAs correlating to what we have left? And all the kind of things you could also ask yourself before, but with enormous manual effort for each and every single question, that's not doable in a large organization. You have decision on a fingertip, you need it, and then you can do like scenario plannings and all the kind of things. Yeah. And the other one, a very, very real world life example, we have We are partnering for packaged goods on road with a large partner already for a couple of years in America. And as then the crisis came and out of a sudden we had a driver shortage, of course, they also had to deal with driver shortages. Yes, of course.
Yes.
But there's a different question if you are working with a big professional partner and he deals for you with the driver shortages, or you have like multiples. We have like 1,500 different service providers driving for us at the moment. We are changing that. And you have then basically to deal with the driver shortages yourself. Yeah. And the outcome of the story was, yeah, there was a problem, a worldwide crisis that does not go away. But if you have a partner that is more reliable and more robust in terms of crisis handling. So that was definitely also something that proved that our strategy in terms of transport management is also going into the right direction.
Mm. Yeah, makes sense. Now to kind of move towards the topic of talent and skills, and you know, mathematics is actually useful for AI. Yeah? So I don't know if you've also studied some models. It was fairly early on, but I remember I had a good also German friend, and he had studied in the 90s artificial intelligence. So it's been around for a while. But my question is, how do you see the impact of AI and all this machine learning and models specifically for supply chain? And are you already working, implementing, testing, experimenting with some?
We have positive, very promising results in our forecast accuracy, just applying basic models, so to speak. Already basic models, having now all the data in one system, yeah, and playing around with historical forecast data. They prove to be very, very strong and robust. And now we have to learn, okay, how will they really be in a real life situation, like predicting not the past, but the future. Yeah. But the results so far were very, very promising. And we have digital experts, data scientists, real AI experts. I am not anymore. I've been too long out of this, working together with also other partners, with the MIT and so on, to further explore the options that coming out of having data really in a system. So I really believe that AI is going to be a game changer in terms of decision support. I don't see that we will end up in fully autonomous supply chain, especially not in the chemical industry, because you forget that what we are doing in the end is really dangerous. We can handle it. That's good. Yeah. If you look around the globe, you do not see that many things in the press from out of the chemical industry that really are going sideways. Of course they are. Yeah. Just wait long enough and everything that's possible is going to happen. Yeah. But security, safety, that's the top of our priorities. That's one of the reasons why also this industry is relatively conservative compared to other ones, because the things that we do are really dangerous. We know how to handle them. Yeah. Not everyone is allowed to, which is good. Yeah. And once you've proven to your government, to your environmental society that you can't handle it, you are out. You're really out. Yeah. So fully autonomous supply chains, I don't see, at least not in that industry. However, decision support, let's ask a machine a verbal question, okay, what is the best preferred scenario, and what will happen like if we lose a harbor in somewhere in Asia for whatever reason? Yeah. What is the impact to our supply chain? Can you calculate? That is something where we now nowadays need to implement models ourselves, which takes time. We have to harden them. We have to test them. I really expect that this is going to be much more quicker in the future than it is of today. However, the final call still needs to be done by a human. And there is a lot of, and don't forget, there is a lot of operative thing work if you are in a production area, which will, of course, you could take it over by a robotics, but that is not cost efficient. Yeah.
Yes.
Robotics will take over some part of the work, not all. So I think we will merge. So it's AI and I, as I just saw on a picture, which I very, very like. So it's a supporter, like a computer is a supporter in my day's work. And as most likely as our dad started to work, yeah, they didn't have a computer. It was the first interruption in their industry. Yeah. Then all of a sudden they could type something on a keyboard. It's a supporter. Yeah. And I really see that at least for the next couple of years, decades, this is going to be the same with AI.
And final question for those that are just graduating or young professionals in the supply chain field, what would be one or two pieces of advice, things that have been most helpful to you in your career to make it to the executive level?
I think two, maybe three. The first, and I think by far more the strongest one, is make yourself aware or make yourself clear what you love. Because only the things you love, you will do that often that you really get good at it. Yeah. And in order to have a position with an outstanding impact, you need to be good at certain things. Outstanding good, better than the others. Yeah. Make sure what these things are that you are good at. And most often than not, these are also the things that you love. Otherwise, you would not have been good at them at all. And then second, search a job where you can apply your strengths. There's no meaning if you are, let's say, in the IT industry and you are programming things, but you would like to interact more with people. It would influence, you would like to coach them. Then you are with a strong skill set in the wrong type of job. Yeah. So don't try to apply yourself to the job, make it the other way around. Yeah. There is always in the world is such big, there's always a place in the world where you can shine. Go to that place. And then, yeah, ask other people for feedback, for advice. Don't do everything yourself. Network is at a certain level more important than the things that you can do yourself. Because you have, as a leader, you need to inspire people. And more often than not, just look around in your world. Who is inspiring you and why? Is he or she inspiring you because she has better knowledge than you? Or because there is a bigger picture to tell, to explore, to something to describe where you say, okay, that's cool. Actually, I want to join him or her on that journey. And in my experience, more often than not, that's not the technical skills that are more the social, the leadership skills. They are uppermost important, maybe not at the very beginning of your career, but later on. So you have to constantly adapt your skill sets on the journey. Otherwise, yeah, there's a book that basically says what got you here won't get you there. So don't assume whatever makes you successful to get to a certain step makes you successful here and enable you to the next steps later on. That's a very, very big mistake.
And that's a wonderful book, by the way. Everybody should read it by Marshall Goldsmith. What got you here won't get you there. It's simple
I'm
principle.
Not sure if I won't be allowed to advertise something, but I agree with you. That is one of the most inspiring books I read in that area so far.
Exactly. And common sense, but common sense is not that common. So, you know, that's why it's good to it's good to read the smart books about the, you know, written by other smarter people. Thomas, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for the open sharing many examples and walking us through the journey at Evonik. Good luck with the rest of the journey. Of course, it never ends really. So good luck with the many projects. And it's been a delight to have you.
Okay. Thanks a lot for having me. And Radu, take care. Till next time. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to go to www.elcottglobal.com and click the podcast button for all the show notes of the interview. Also, subscribe to our mailing list to get our latest updates first. If you're listening through a streaming platform like iTunes, Spotify or Stitcher, we would appreciate a kind review. 5-star works best to keep us going and our production team happy. And of course, share it with your friends. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me. And if you have any suggestions on what to do and who to invite next, don't hesitate to drop me a note. And if you're looking to hire top executives in supply chain or transform your business, of course, contact us as well to find out how we can help. You.